You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the staff of the Cincinnati Zoo made the controversial decision this weekend to shoot an endangered silverback gorilla after a young boy fell into the enclosure. People quickly turned on the boy's mother and questioned why she wasn't watching the child more closely. We'll talk about parenting and responsibility in a half an hour.
First, 20 years ago, medical disorders like binge eating disorder, intermittent explosive disorder, and low testosterone weren't considered a part of mainstream science.
Today, millions of Americans now deal with these and other non-life-threatening conditions thanks to new medical definitions and lowered thresholds for diagnosis, which means millions of Americans are buying more prescription drugs to treat these concerns.
Some doctors and researchers are skeptical, though, saying these conditions are the product of pharmaceutical industry funding and drug companies trying to get more customers.
John Fauber joins us now to talk about a report he did on this issue. He's a medical reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and part of the USA Today network. His latest piece is called Illness Inflation. It was done in partnership with MedPage Today. John, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get into some of the specific conditions, quote unquote, I guess, you looked at how widespread is this idea that we're seeing more types of diagnoses, a lower threshold for diagnoses that's making people eligible for new and different medications?
Well, it's a growing phenomenon, I guess. It's a process that some people refer to as medicalization, where you take a condition that maybe has some basis in everyday life and turn it into a medical disorder. And so we decided, you know, we, as a medical reporter and my colleague on this, Christina Fiore, who works with MedPage, she and I had both kind of seen this becoming more and more of a common thing over the years, so we decided to take a look at a bunch of these conditions just to see how they evolved and how they made the move from sort of conditions of everyday life to medical disorders, or in some cases actually psychiatric disorders.
Let's look at a couple of these just so we know what we're talking about here. One, intermittent explosive disorder. That sounds pretty bad. It sounds like it means getting really, really angry sometimes. Could you talk about that and how it became a more widespread diagnosis?
Yeah, and that's one that I thought was really interesting. You know, it's got a lot of these conditions are known by acronyms that usually end in D. Intermittent explosive disorder is IED, and a lot of people probably know that term from the Gulf War, which it was a intermittent explosive device, but in psychiatry it's a whole different thing. And it's a condition that that essentially is something that people who have anger and rage issues that are inappropriate or beyond what is, you know, justified, and to have this on a regular basis, this is what they may be labeled as having, intermittent explosive disorder. You know, I guess the common one is road rage. It can be both. It can be either physical outbursts, you know, where you actually assault someone or damage property. But it can also just be verbal. They changed the definition of the condition a few years ago. It used to have to be something that was physical. In other words, people or property. And then in 2013, when the American Psychiatric Association came out with its new manual on psychiatric disorders, they essentially said it could be just verbal if it happened on a frequent enough basis.
Now, that's more of a psychiatric one. There's also diagnoses like low testosterone, where that's, I guess, something you can measure and put a number on. How has that changed?
Sure. So, you know, for many years, there were drugs going back decades that treated low testosterone that was a result of some kind of injury or illness. It was kind of a rare condition called hypogonadism, and it was largely unknown to most people. And then as the sort of the baby boom generation started getting older and started having some of the symptoms that have been associated with low testosterone, these drugs started being used more to treat age-related loss of testosterone. This is sort of the normal loss of testosterone that occurs with aging. And when that occurs, there's symptoms that are sort of linked to it, everything from lack of interest in sex to, you know, more fat tissue to moodiness is a number of conditions. In 2006, there was a big study done. It was funded by a drug company, the company that was making the leading testosterone product at the time. And they did a big national survey of men who went into their doctors, and they tested their blood levels of testosterone and determined that substantial numbers of men over the age of 45 had low testosterone, or what would be eventually become known as low T. They found that about 14 million men had low T. This was in 2006, and then a few years later, people started seeing a lot of the TV commercials you probably recall on low testosterone. So that's kind of the story of low testosterone.
Now, those are just a couple of the examples. You look at eight or more different conditions, but a uniting theme is that a drug ends up being developed for these new diagnoses, or an existing drug is repurposed for it, or there's a drug coming down the pipeline. So is there a suspicion that this isn't really a medical issue? This is somehow driven by pharmaceutical company money?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the theme of the story, or one of the themes of our stories that we did on this. And this is sort of we're taking a long-term look at this. We had an initial bunch of stories that ran a couple of weeks ago. There were four stories, and we're planning to do more throughout the year. But yes, drug company, you know, fingerprints can be found all over these conditions. And it happens in a variety of different ways. You know, I mentioned low T. Well, the company that funded the study that said that 14 million men over the age of 45 have low testosterone was a company known as Solvay Pharmaceutical, which made the leading testosterone product at the time. Drug company money can also be used to fund medical societies or associations that actually create the definitions of some of these diseases or disorders. There's like the American Psychiatric Association has defined several of them. So has the American Diabetes Association. One of the conditions we looked at is pre-diabetes, and the American Diabetes Association has received millions of dollars in annual funding from companies that make diabetes drugs. And as a matter of fact, the panel of experts that set the definition for pre-diabetes, they did it twice, actually. Over the last 13 years, the majority of them had financial arrangements with drug companies, either working as speakers or consultants. So you can see the drug company influence in that way. And again, you can also see it with some of these studies that are done to create what are known as prevalence estimates, and that is how many people actually have one of these conditions. Oftentimes, the people, the experts who do this are people who, are doctors and sometimes academic physicians who have financial relationships with drug companies.
Talking to John Fauber from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about illness inflation, the idea that new medical diagnoses are being come up with or existing ones are being expanded, diagnosing more of us with a problem, and we're getting prescribed medications to deal with them. And John, that's the big worry, isn't it? That maybe a lot of us are taking medications that we don't really need, and no medication really comes out without a risk of some kind of side effect.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a big concern. Not all of these conditions have drugs that are approved to treat them, although all of them have drugs that have been used or can be used to treat them. Maybe a good example would be binge eating disorder. A couple of years ago, the FDA approved a drug, an amphetamine known as Vyvanse, to treat it. It's a drug that comes with a lot of severe warnings. It has a high potential for creating abuse and dependence. It can raise your heart rate. There have been reports of, you know, people dying suddenly as a result of heart attacks and strokes. And so the drug was approved to treat binge eating disorder on the basis that it reduced the number of binge eating sessions that a person has from roughly, I think it was 3.9 from an average of 5 per week to by 3.9 per week, which is a fairly significant number of reduced numbers of binge eating sessions. But the placebo that it was tested against also reduced the number of sessions by about 2.5 per week. So you have to kind of weigh the risk of the side effects and the complications of the drug with the potential benefits. And in some cases, there are people who feel that the harms outweigh the benefits. Another good example would be adult ADHD. There's a number of amphetamines and stimulants that can be used to treat that condition, many of which carry some of the same risk factors and problems that the drug that's used to treat binge eating disorder. In fact, the drug that's approved to treat binge eating disorder also is one of the drugs that's approved to treat adult ADHD.
And John, as we wrap up, in your reporting, did you see pushback within the medical community or from the outside on these expanded definitions, this growing medicalization of what might just be sort of normal problems?
Yeah, I mean, there's a segment of physicians and researchers who think some of this has gone too far and have written, medical papers and medical journals about this topic and think that it needs to be reined in somewhat. I mean, the eight conditions that we looked at, if you believe the medical literature, affect up to 180 million Americans. And just sort of common sense sort of suggests that is possible that eight conditions that aren't life threatening that virtually no one heard of 20 years ago affect that largest segment of society. I mean, prediabetes, there was just a paper that came out a few months ago that said that roughly half the state of California has prediabetes. So there's a group of physicians and people who are sort of, I guess, more reform-minded, who are trying to curtail this or at least call attention to it. But it continues to happen. So how it will play out in the ultimately, I guess, is anybody's guess.
John, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's reporter John Fauber from the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel talking about widening definitions of medical disorders and the related growth of drug sales.
Coming up, a mother is getting international criticism after her son fell into a gorilla enclosure this weekend at a zoo, which ended up with the zoo gorilla being killed by officials. And we'll talk about parenting and responsibility in just a moment. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferrett. Coming up tonight at 7, it's Latino USA. On tonight's edition, we'll learn about the rise and meaning of Spanglish, a language hybrid of English and Spanish. That's coming up tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, this weekend, a young boy visiting the Cincinnati Zoo fell into the gorilla enclosure. The child was confronted by an endangered male, a silverback gorilla named Harambe.
Zoo officials decided ultimately to shoot and kill the gorilla, which led to an international backlash against that decision, and it led to widespread criticism of the child's parents.
Some commentators online turned on the child's mother and called her parenting abilities into question.
A petition on change.org that quickly amassed hundreds of thousands of signatures said not only the zoo, but the parents should be held responsible for negligence.
Our next guest says we shouldn't be too quick to judge the parents in this kind of situation. Lenore Scanese joins us now. She's the founder of the book and blog Free Range Kids, and she's a contributor to Reason.com. Lenore, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, Lenore, what is your take on what happened this weekend?
I don't have a take on what happened this weekend, except that something very sad and tragic occurred, and I wasn't there, and I'd say 99.99% of the people commenting on it weren't there. What bothers me the most is the idea that people would second-guess both the zoo and especially the mother, as if the mother must have been bad. You know, nobody even talks about anybody else, but it's always the mother, because her child got away from her, and therefore it must be negligence. But I don't know anybody who's a parent who hasn't had an experience or more of their kid disappearing. Where did they go? Oh, my God, he was just here. She was just with me. And to say that that means that the parent is automatically negligent and terrible, a mom who's nice enough to take a weekend day and bring her kids to the zoo where there has never been a problem like this in 40 years, and to say, how dare she not be watching him every single second, the woman should be hanged, to me, it strikes me as it's a witch burning. You know, we're all really sad. I am too, that a gorilla has died, you know, a species that is endangered. But that doesn't mean that you're a bad parent because you can't keep track of all your kids every single second of every single day.
We heard from, you know, as you said, a lot of people on the internet, some more well-known than others, and Jeff Corwin, the well-known animal and nature conservationist, he had this to say about this news that Harambe was killed.
Mm-hmm.
Zoos aren't your babysitter. Take a break from the cell phone and the selfie stick and the texting. Connect with your children and be responsible for your children.
So, Lenore, zoos aren't your babysitter. I mean,
well, nobody said that the zoo was supposed to be babysitting, but perfection is not possible either. And this new idea that parents must have their eyes on their children every single second is impossible, and it sort of just allows us to get down on any parent of a kid where anything bad happens to them. We just feel like only, you know, if something bad happens to a child, it must be because the parent is bad. And yet there's this great story out of England where the Prime Minister of England was at a pub with his family, and he left, and then his wife left, and later on they both realized, like, oh, we don't have our child.
Oh, boy. Right?
They had both forgotten the kid, who was 8 years old, in the bathroom. You know, he thought the kid was with her. The mother thought the kid was with the prime minister. But the point is that none of us are absolutely perfect parents. And to suggest that when something happens like that, when something, quote, unquote, bad happens, like a kid being forgotten, it can only happen because a parent just isn't good enough. Parents are trying their hardest. I think a mom who takes her kids to the zoo, you know, is a nice mom. And also, you're allowed to trust the odds. For 40 years, this zoo was perfectly safe. No child or adult, for that matter, had ever gotten in to this exhibit. So when something really weird and out of the ordinary happens that you couldn't possibly have predicted, I don't see why we jump to blame, except that we love to blame, period.
But to play devil's advocate here, I mean, maybe we are more distracted than we should be these days as parents. People do have their cell phones and their selfies. I don't know if this mom was on them or not,
mm-hmm.
but maybe there are places where you do expect a higher level of vigilance. And, you know, the time elapsed for a child to crawl inside the fence and then fall into the moat. I mean, it's a bit of time elapsed there, at least. Do parents need to kind of step it up, maybe?
Right. Well, actually, on both my site, which is Free Range Kids, and the site I write for, Reason.com, there is a firsthand account today of a woman who was there with her family, and it was the mom was, like, looked around and was frantic and couldn't see that the kid was in the bushes, and by the time she realized where he was, it was too late. But this idea of a higher level of vigilance is a pretty darn high level that we're suggesting now. And I hear it all the time. I mean, at my site and at Reason, I get letters all the time from parents who are being investigated or sometimes even arrested for letting their kids play outside or walk to school or sometimes even be in the backyard without them. And the reason for these arrests is this new assumption that anytime a parent's eyes aren't directly on their child, there's something wrong. And that level of vigilance is a new one. I mean, I don't know how old you are, but I'm guessing that when you were a kid, you were allowed to do things like walk to school or play outside without your parents literally watching you every single second, right?
Well, we're talking with Lenore Scanese right now, author of the book and blog Free Range Kids, a contributor to Reason.com. And we're talking about the reaction to what happened in Cincinnati, the Cincinnati Zoo, where a mother's three-year-old son fell into the gorilla exhibit and the male silverback gorilla ended up being killed by the zoo staff. And Lenore, you talked about there was this sort of swift reaction when this happened, people looking to the mother, mm-hmm. asking her to be more vigilant. Why do you think that is? Is this a product of the internet, or is this a product of the age in which we live?
So many interesting things intersecting, in my opinion. First of all, we love to blame victims. And in this case, we're going to blame the mom for not taking enough care of her child. And it reminds me of the way we used to blame rape victims. It's like we want to distance ourselves and to say there must have been some reason this happened. It could never happen to me because I wouldn't. And then with rape victims, we'd say, I wouldn't walk that late at night, or I would never go in that neighborhood. I would not wear that short a skirt. It was a way of saying there's something wrong with that person, not that life is sometimes unpredictable and cruel. So there's a way of distancing ourselves first. Secondly, yes, the internet makes it obviously very easy to condemn, and we're all doing it from, I'm in New York, I'm like 1,000 miles away, and there are people doing it from 10,000 miles away. That's the tenor of the times when you're electronically allowed to weigh in on things that you were not at all involved with. And then there is this notion that I was trying to get to when I was asking you about whether your childhood was under constant supervision, that somehow there's this new level of surveillance that we're expecting of parents and that we want kids to get used to, which is almost Big Brother-esque, which is that you never, literally never take your eyes off your child. And whether you're at the zoo or in your neighborhood or at the mall, a parent who turns around to get a drink of water or to pick up a quarter they dropped or whatever it is, somehow that person has immediately put their child in danger. And then we'll point to an instance like this and say, see, as if this proves something. This is such an exceptional circumstance we're talking about. I mean, I hate to keep harping on it, but to me, if something hasn't been dangerous for 40 years, and you know that you're going to a zoo, you're not in a safari circumstance, you know, you're in a place where the animals are safely enclosed, as far as you know, it's not crazy to, you know, to turn around for a second and take a picture. It's just part of life, and nobody could have predicted this.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Kevin with us in Tomaha. Kevin, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say, you know, everybody should share a little bit, the parents, the zoo, of course. But what about all the spectators that are standing around? You know, it takes a village to raise a family and whatever like that. Somebody should have been watching this child, at least notice that they were climbing on the railing or whatever.
Yeah, you'd think, Kevin, that somebody would have noticed. So, I don't know, Lenore, should we be sharing the blame? Should everyone there have been feeling bad?
The word blame is what's, I think, maybe misplaced, because sometimes terrible things happen. There are accidents. There are explosions. There are car crashes. Well, car crashes, perhaps there is somebody to blame. But something like this, sure, if somebody had seen the kid, yes, I would have hoped they would have grabbed the child. But it's possible nobody did. I mean, the mother was heard to be looking around for the child, like, where is he? He was here a second ago. I don't know a parent. I personally don't know any parents, let's put it that way, who haven't had that instant, usually when the child is not ending up in terrible circumstances like this, where they look around and they go, oh, my God, he was just here. I mean, I remember screaming like a maniac on 34th Street here in Manhattan when my son must have been about 6 or 7, and we were there shopping for backpacks and I thought my son was with my husband. He thought the son was with me. We could not find him, and I was screaming his name, and it turned out that he'd gone back into the store looking for us. I don't think I was a terrible parent. I don't think my husband was a terrible parent. If he'd been hit by a bus, everybody would say, oh, my God, those awful, awful parents. But thank you for the grace of God. My kid just happened to go in a store and come back out and didn't accidentally climb into a gorilla cage that somehow he could get into.
Lenore Scanese is with us now, founder of the book and blog Free Range Kids, and she's joining us to talk about the outrage at a Cincinnati mother whose three-year-old son fell into a gorilla exhibit at a zoo. The male silverback gorilla ended up being killed by the zoo staff.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you make of all of this? Do you think the parents in this case should be held responsible, should deserve some blame, or do you agree with our guest that parents shouldn't be, don't have to be vigilant every moment, and sometimes bad things happen? Do you place the blame? Is there blame to place in the first place? Have you, as a parent, had this moment? Where's the kid? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and we're continuing our conversation now about parental responsibility following events at the Cincinnati Zoo this weekend, where a young boy fell into a gorilla enclosure, and in order to protect the child from harm, the zoo decided to kill the endangered silverback gorilla.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. The internet is out there. A lot of people on the internet blaming the kid's parents, the kid's mother in particular. Do you think they are right to do so? Does she deserve blame? Do you think she's a bad parent? Or do you think that accidents happen? Do you agree with our guest that we've become too vigilant and that when a really odd, unusual occurrence like this happens, we shouldn't necessarily blame the parents for being inattentive? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Right now, we're joined by Lenore Scanese. She's the founder of the book and the blog Free Range Kids, and she's a contributor to Reason.com. And we take our first caller now. We've got Jacob with us in Whitewater. Jacob, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
I was listening a little bit, and while I do think this is unfortunate, and it happens to every parent, you know, you lose track of your kid for a moment. That happens to everyone. It's the same way I think that everyone at some point has accidentally run a stop sign, or accidentally run a red light, or misjudged the yellow turning red, something of that effect. If you get into an accident in that situation, you are at fault. It happens to everyone. Not everyone has a bad outcome, but that doesn't mean that you still can't be assessed blame for doing something, you know, that put someone else in danger. Or in this case, you know, I think the parents do have to assume some blame. It's unfortunate that in this case the kid didn't just run into a department store, but instead he climbed a fence and walked into a gorilla cage. But if you're around the gorilla exhibit and, you know, you have a three-year-old kid or a four-year-old kid or a young kid that you know likes to climb stuff and wander off and do things, you should be a little more attentive. There are certain times where it's totally okay to let your kids run free and roam free and do all of those things. And yes, nothing has happened at the zoo in 40 years, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you should still be somewhat more vigilant around things that will cause your children some danger.
Jacob, thank you for that. And Lenore, mm-hmm. an interesting point there from Jacob. Mm-hmm. Jacob's saying just because it's unfortunate it was an accident that no one wanted to happen or saw happening there, maybe there is still blame there to be ascribed, just like with running a light that you didn't mean to run.
Well, running a light is somebody in a car. And what we're talking about here is a parent. And, you know, this is a zoo that has had probably a couple of million children visit over the 40 years of its existence. And I'm sure that a lot of the children are not, you can't watch every single child every single second. And them, you know, just the fact that you are glancing away does not make you a negligent person, especially in a situation where the way it's being described is, of course, it's a dangerous situation with a gorilla there. Well, if I thought the zoo was a dangerous place with a gorilla there, I wouldn't go. I'm not talking about going to a forest preserve filled with wild bears or something. We're talking about a place where the animals are safely enclosed away from the people. So, you know, millions of people go, 40 years go by, to say that this is a situation that's like a stop sign where everybody has to be on high guard is, I think, not a perfect analogy. And what's interesting to me is that, like, it's like we're desperate to blame somebody. We want to blame the mom or the zoo or the kid or something. There's something very spectator sport about this desire to to put our anger onto somebody. I'm very, very sad that this gorilla is dead. I mean, just even looking at the picture, you love the gorilla, but I love the family too. There's no way that we can expect perfection from people. Just in the day-to-day life of raising your kids and bringing them to a safe place on a summer day.
Thank you for that call, Jacob. We appreciate it. And we're going to go next to Ray. Ray is joining us in Heartland. Ray, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to share?
So I guess my main comment, because we kind of watched this story, is nobody's actually shown the fence and talked about it. Even in the show, you talked about the child going over the fence. I kind of looked on the internet and looked, they showed it briefly, and it was a sort of a horizontal wire fence. The child might have very quickly gone through it, such a small size. I'm a little frustrated that even the national news has not really talked about this, because the real question is, was the mother not watching for 2 or 3 minutes, or was it that quick? And it appears by what I saw on the fence that the child would go through it very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Ray, thank you for that. Ray, looking at issues of zoo safety, and that's been another hot button in this. And CNN, actually, Lenore, ran an interesting piece about... Mm-hmm. safety rules at the zoo and saying that some parents, you know, if you're a parent, don't dangle your kid over the lion moat.
And that's probably a great idea.
It's a good idea, right?
Yes, yes. You know, the other thing I wanted to say is that we're looking for blame. We really want to be angry. I think it's because we're really in mourning. We really are very sad about this gorilla. And so rather than going, grr, I would have never done that, and she's so bad, and why didn't she clutch him, and why didn't she have him on a leash, how about let's figure out, let's turn this into something good and figure out a way to support more gorillas in the wild. Let's support the Wildlife Federation. Let's support sanctuaries in the countries that the gorillas come from. Let's do something that makes the world a better place instead of just saying, wow, she's so awful. I mean, there's this horrible meme going around that shows a beautiful gorilla, and it says, I'm dead today because some, and then there's a swear word because some, you know, lady, rhymes with witch, wasn't watching her children. That just seems guaranteed to raise people's blood pressure and make them feel like, well, I would never do that. I'm a better person, as opposed to making the world a better place. Go do something on behalf of gorillas.
Lenore, what you said, I mean, that's not outside the pale for the way people communicate on the internet, the meme you just talked about. But it makes me wonder, too, if maybe this, some of it could be tapping into kind of anti-child sentiment. I mean, there in some places, obviously zoos are tolerant of kids. Kids go to the zoos. They love them. But it makes you wonder if there's more going on there. What do you think?
I think rather than anti-child, it's anti-mom. I mean, there's really like zero wiggle room for any mom ever. Why is she feeding him that? Why did she let him stay up so late? Why did she let him watch that television show? I mean, we are extraordinarily judgmental when it comes to parents today, as if there is A, a perfect way to parent, and B, as if children are so delicate that if we don't do everything absolutely right, oh my God, she fed him a non-organic grape. I can't believe it. She didn't even watch it. That the child is not going to be able to thrive. And so if we would just, remember our own childhoods, remember our parents let us have free time. Nobody was screaming at them. If a kid got lost for a while, everybody shook their head and said, oh, kids, they'll drive you crazy. And then they shared in the humanity of raising children, which is that we can never be all things. We can never be perfect. Our children are going to surprise us. Our children are going to pop up places we didn't expect them and not be places we expected them to be. And this is called life. Life isn't perfect. We're all sad that this happened, but it was so unpredictable.
And we have to leave it there. Lenore, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for letting me come on your show.
That was Lenore Skenazy, founder of the book and the blog Free Range Kids, and she's also a contributor to Reason.com. And she was there talking with us about parental responsibility following the scandal at the Cincinnati Zoo and the child that fell into the gorilla enclosure and the gorilla was killed.